Hello, all. This is Erica Hood
and Maria Figueroa.
And you are listening to the Center for Reducing Health Disparities Think Tank podcast, Point Blank.
And today we're shooting it out to you straight, connecting research to community
and learning from those academic, clinical, and community experts.
What's today's topic?
Hello all, my name is Erica Hood and I'm the Program Development Manager at the Center for Reducing Health Disparities.
Hi, I'm Maria Figueroa and I also work at the Center for Reducing Health Disparities.
Hello, my name is Antonio Guerra, Creative Director of Finca Tuya, Cacha La Tuya.
I'm Sylvia Colon, the co-founder for the Cleveland Family Center for Missing Children and Adults.
I'm Freddy Diaz, I'm with the Cleveland Police Community Relations Unit and part of the Hispanic Police Officer Association Board Secretary.
I'm Randy Cedeno, and I am a community member born and raised in La Villa Hispana and born at Metro Hospital.
Sweet. Nice. Well, welcome home. Welcome back to your first home. And can I ask you, Antonio, like your organization that you're representing, the name is like super cool. What does that mean?
All right, so Finca is your farmland. So the idea is just to build and grow with grassroots in mind. But, you know, not everybody is a farmer nowadays, but we all have our own crops that we tend to. So the idea is to cacha la tuya, which is to honor and take what's yours.
I like that. Sweet. All right, so guys, I just wanted to get everyone here on the same page. At the Center for Reducing Health Disparities, we do a lot of work on health disparities, and here in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County, a lot of those communities impacted most by health disparities are Black and Brown communities. So on the heels of Hispanic Heritage Month, we just want to bring in a group of community folks who can come and sit and talk and educate not only our listeners, the patients and participants of our research studies, but also our research community. A lot of times we do really good research work, but we can all do a better job of getting closer to the communities that are impacted by our research. So I thank you all for coming today, and I thank you for sharing your time and a little bit of your experiences. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this Hispanic Heritage Month and what that means. And I think it's really important for me being outside of the community to talk about like some equalizing vocabulary real quick. So can someone explain a little bit about what Hispanic is and Latino, Latina? What does that mean? Because I know sometimes it's a little taboo in how you say it, or someone might say, nah, I'm a Latina. So can you help us kind of understand that better?
Sure, I'll say a little real quick. Well, my understanding for the Hispanic, Latino, Hispanic is predominantly someone that speaks Spanish, that comes from a family that's raised speaking Spanish, Spanish descent. Latino, my understanding, is more of anyone that's descended from Latino America. So they're usually used interchangeably. So I don't think there's really a more correct way to say it, but it's just more of a preference. Me personally, I'm fine with either way.
Does everyone feel that way?
Well, I'll add, when I was in college, this was a topic of discussion. And as Freddie mentioned, Hispanic is more Latino, or Latino America, or descendant of Spanish, right? Spanish-speaking countries. Latino is more encompassing because it includes Brazil and people from Portuguese descent. So that's how I split those two.
The understanding I've kind of had or made of it is I think there's a difference in actual culture from being Hispanic or Latino. I think that Hispanic may bring you more towards being of Spaniard descent as opposed to being of Latin American descent. I think there's a big gap between the cultures. I don't think that the culture is represented, or there's customs that are different from being Spaniard as opposed to Latino America, you know, Latin American. That's kind of been my understanding of it.
And I think I'm okay with using them interchangeably. I don't have a preference.
Okay, I know for me when I say it sometimes, I like sing it out like Hispanic, and I wait for the reaction of the person just to make sure I didn't mess up. So it's kind of cool. Maria, do you have anything to add?
No, I was going to say you do that a lot to me.
I'm learning. So cool. So when did you guys first learn? Like, where were you at in life when you first heard about this Hispanic Heritage Month? Did it mean a lot to you? Was there like a huge impact? I know we have a diverse age range a little bit in here. So what did that mean to you when you can first remember celebrating it?
Well, I think for me, I grew up in the city of Cleveland on the southeast side. I didn't grow up where a lot of folks did who are of Puerto Rican descent. I grew up on the east side of Cleveland in the 60s and 70s, where it was not acceptable to speak Spanish and certainly stand out as somebody who was Spanish. In fact, people didn't call me Colón, they called me Colon, as well as my brother. So I would say that I was definitely very disconnected from half of who I was, because my father is Puerto Rican. And I grew up in a very Anglo community of Polish and Serbian folks. So that's really what I identified with as a younger girl. And then growing up and really being able to access more of who I was, I certainly am brown skin. When I don't flat iron my hair, it's very curly. I was really much more able to access who I was. And so I think when those things started coming up, it made me get more in touch with the other part of who I was that maybe wasn't so acceptable in the 60s and 70s.
For me, it was more in high school. Actually, we had a Hispanic Heritage Month celebration at high school. So that's kind of when I heard about it and became aware that it was becoming a part of our culture, more acceptance within our community. So I grew up I went to high school in a predominantly black and brown high school. So we were very in touch with that, and it was nice to feel that we were recognized within the community here in Cleveland.
Well, for me, being raised in La Villa Hispana, everything was pretty much in Spanish for me. Schools, even my teachers, were mainly from Puerto Rico. And so I remember reading in English and discussing in Spanish and whatnot. So I was always surrounded with the culture in Spanish. Church was Spanish, home was Spanish. I'm first generation born here in the States. And so for me, when I learned was somewhere around high school, can't tell you exactly when. But it surprised me, like, why are we doing this? Because it was just, it's always Latino time for me in those days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now where were you raised?
Right here. So I was born and raised here off of 32nd and Clark. So really 32nd Clark and 25th. So you can't escape Latinos if you wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess learning about Hispanic Heritage Month was probably like in middle school, grade school. Kind of went to a very mixed grade school. You kind of had everything kind of going on there. So we did have everyone represented, but that was being in a public school. When I went to high school, I went to a private school, which was not so black and brown. And I don't think that, or for what I remember, I don't remember there being much differences on Hispanic Heritage Month, whether it be in school or really outside of school, because, you know, there's more than just school when it comes to bigger pictures, things like that. So, I don't know, I think that my identification with Hispanic Heritage Month has been kind of come and go, because sometimes you see it more boasted than others, or, you know, it's very prominent at the beginning of the month as opposed to at the end of the month. You know, it kind of fades out, and I kind of feel like that's kind of been like the fad, as long as I've heard about it.
I also agree with Randy. I learned about it when I was in high school. That's when I first got here to the United States. And I also felt like, why are we celebrating Hispanics? You know, it's all my life I lived in Puerto Rico, and now I come here to a different place and they're celebrating us. This is awesome. But yeah, it's great to be able to celebrate your culture, you know, and just share what you know and with others.
And it's interesting too, like as I began this whole podcast journey looking at different topics and things that we can explore, when it came to this episode and talking about Hispanic Heritage Month, and I saw that the dates were kind of like half of September and half of, and I'm like, wait, there has to be a story behind this. So for our listeners who are just as puzzled as I am, September 15th through October 15th is Hispanic Heritage Month, and it's because of the five Latin American countries that celebrate their independence during that time frame. And then later on, two more were even added. So seven Latin American countries that celebrate their independence during that time. So it'll be a very special time of year. So do you guys think it's an all-inclusive celebration? So no matter what country you're representing, do you feel like it's a time that everyone truly like takes advantage of that moment?
I mean, I don't think so. I think that there are so many different kinds of Spanish-speaking folks, most certainly in the city of Cleveland, probably Northeast Ohio, and if you look at the state overall, and I would say not everybody takes advantage of it if they even know about it, right? People that look like us, probably there are many people in the city that don't know what time of the year it is. So I would say most people, well, I can speak for me and the people that I know, do not take full advantage of it.
I think there's a bigger representation now due to like the digital era where, you know, you're able to share and pass along information so quickly and rapidly. So I do see influctuation where, you know, you do see in the beginning of Hispanic Heritage Month where there'll be a presence of, you know, some history or something that took place, and then it'll be followed up the next day with something just as impactful, just as, you know, important. So I think that, you know, it's inclusive to the point that, like, it's there. You know, you just kind of have to seek it, you know.
You know, I would also say, I think it's also based on geographically where, you know, you're located. So, like, in Chicago, for a fact, there's predominantly more Mexican, you know, citizens over there. Here in Cleveland, I would say it's probably more predominantly Puerto Rican. So, you know, here in Cleveland, I would say it's predominantly enjoyed more by Puerto Ricans. You go to Chicago, maybe a little bit more Mexican, Texas, and so forth. So I think it just depends also the locations of, you know, where you are, you know, across the country.
I agree. Also, to add to the point that social media has, you know, it's prevalent. It's in everybody's hands, right? So it's just a touch away. Even my mom, who is in her 60s, is texting and on social media, and so is my father, which is kind of weird. But nonetheless, there is more access. Who takes advantage of it and who doesn't? That depends on who you're talking to, right? I work with a number of groups and citizens who are from across the globe, and not everyone knows about what's going on, right? So, for example, I'm working with someone from Peru at the moment who has been here no more than 2 years or no more than 3 years specifically, and he's like, "What? What's this? Why are they trying to ask me all these questions about my home country at this specific time?" I'm like, dude, take advantage of it. Educate somebody. Yeah. Show them the love.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think that is what is most important. I know Metro has definitely embraced celebrating the last 30 days or so. We had a luncheon today that had some panelists talk about some barriers, you know, within our Hispanic community and ways to kind of work with our patients to provide more access and more, I guess, decrease those challenges that so many of them may have in engaging with Metro Health. So talking about health, let's make a little shift. How do you guys think that the community views healthcare overall? So right outside of Metro's doors, we step into the Hispanic community. I have two boys that go to school right in the area. So like Maria's taking me to all these cool places that I've never experienced. And, you know, it's pretty cool to work on the west side and I see such a huge flip. Sylvia, you just mentioned it, you know, growing up on the east side because the city is so segregated. I'm in a totally different city, it seems. So it's pretty cool. But with that said, with Metro being housed right here in the community, how do you guys think the community looks at access to Metro Health or other healthcare institutions, like the state of the health for the Hispanic community?
For folks around the specific or the area right around Metro Health, I think that they absolutely know that Metro Health plays a real vital and major role in their health care. So I think in this community, they absolutely get it. If you go out through the rest of the city, I'm not so sure that they would see that, right? And I think a lot of it also comes around education. what is available to you and how do you use the healthcare system? And, you know, we can have long conversations about how people use the healthcare system, whether it be appropriate or not appropriate, right? We can talk about the over and misuse of folks coming into the emergency department and maybe not following up with a regular healthcare provider. So all those things. So while I think that people are very aware of it and what specifically MetroHealth brings to the community, I think that there's still much work to be done. How do we do it? Well, if I had that answer, I'd probably be really rich. I don't have that answer, but I know for sure that there's still more work that needs to be done.
I agree that there's a lot more work that needs to be done. Being part of this community and, you know, living and working still in the community surrounding MetroHealth Hospital, the reality is if we think culturally and we think of our parents or the generation that came before us, they didn't have access to anything, right? I just had a conversation with my mom on Sunday of all days, talking about, oh yeah, when we needed to go to the doctors, no, you figure out how you do it on your own in el campo, no? You get some leaves, you make a tea, you do something, you figure it out on your own, right? And so when they came over here, they were stuck with the same mentality. Now some of the kids repeated the same thing with their kids. Now when you go to the second, third generation, that's where you start seeing the change, because we've been educated or we've been through the American education system and we realize, wait, hold up, there's help. I can get somewhere, I can get some assistance, right? And to hone in on that point of MetroHealth actually showing out, right? MetroHealth has that bus that's continually around our community and you cannot miss this thing because it's ginormous, right? And so I am a testament of seeing boots on the ground and educating the community. Some of your representatives from MetroHealth are showing up at churches, community events and whatnot, and just trying to get the word out like, hey, the resources here, you gotta take care of yourself. And so is there work to be done? Yes, has a lot been done by leaps and bounds, but we still got a long way to go.
Yeah, I would say I won't comment so much about the access, but I would say that, you know, Metro has done a lot of, made some strides within the community. I know for a fact I work in community relations, and we come here once a month with the Cleveland Foundation, Cleveland Police Foundation. We visit kids, and we bring them gifts, and we interact with them a little bit. And, you know, from a police officer's, you know, perspective, that reaches out to them. So it's almost like multifaceted. Not only are they receiving health care, but we're also, you know, mending some of those relationships within the community, which, you know, are great. I know I've been here multiple times, and I've met with a lot of Hispanic families. Some of them don't even speak Spanish, or I'm sorry, don't speak English. So I've been able to interact with them and show them, you know, what it's like to be in this community as a police officer and what we do around our city.
Generally, I think the community really values and believes in Metro. Me, myself, my family, we've been through a bunch of traumatic, you know, experiences, and I know that Metro's been able to do some magical things for us. You know, without the education, you know, you wouldn't know that. So it's, you know, it starts outside of, you know, this big building, but I know that it's valued for sure.
So Metro is an awesome institution. This is not a Metro commercial. This was not intended to be that way. But I'm glad to hear that some wonderful things have happened that you guys can attest to. So that's awesome, because I do feel like I work for a really great place. So that's cool to hear.
It's the healthcare provider closest to all of us. So when you talk about healthcare, you know, the biggest thing that comes up to us in the neighborhood is Metro. It's right there. So at any point that any conversation of healthcare comes up, you think about, well, I'm going to need to go to the hospital at some point. And, you know, the closest one to me is Metro, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think about the possibilities, you know, of what can or cannot be, you know, but without the education or backing behind it, you know, you're going to fall short.
Yeah, just to add that, mm-hmm. The time of the access to Metro and Metro being here and the generations being around also influences these decisions coming in.
Mm.
The experiences from 30, 40, 50 years up to this point.
So you guys mentioned there seems to be areas of challenges with generations. And then also, you mentioned language, I think, too, Freddie. How are those things being addressed? Are there still language issues when it comes to accessing healthcare and sending mom or dad to the hospital, and they may not be able to speak English or communicate with their doctors well. Is that something that you still have to address in your families?
Yeah, from my perspective, yeah, my mom doesn't speak English very well, so she always needs, you know, someone to translate. So usually, you know, falls upon us as her kids to handle that. But you know, I think we have made some progress in a lot of areas, you know, not only within the healthcare, but just in general with the city. I know the city of Cleveland has done a lot of efforts campaigning to translate a lot of documents and stuff like that. So could we improve? There's always a way to improve, you know, many things. But speaking from, you know, the police department, we've done a lot of efforts, including, you know, myself and another fellow coworker. We're recently assigned to community relations unit, and, you know, we're able to bridge some of that gaps with our Hispanic community. So I think we're making some good progress. I think even just sitting here in a room, you know, full of leaders within the community, you know, kind of shows and highlights the effort to make and reach out to make sure we include and diversify, you know, our communities, which is very important to the success of any community.
Yeah, I wanted to add to that. I do think Metro has come up a long way. When you talk about translating and interpreting for people who don't speak, you know, the language, English language. I've been here for 28 years. And when I first came here, I had to translate for my parents because, of course, they didn't speak English. So, you know, just knowing that you can send people here and they won't need anyone with them, that's a great thing.
All right, so we've been talking a lot about families. And share with me a little bit about your family's journey and how it all played out. What was, you know, those trailblazers that came here, what were some of their thoughts and ideas about what would happen? And do you see that playing out now as future generations are now being brought up in Cleveland, you know, Ohio of all places? Like, how does is that vision or that dream being played out?
Well, I think for me, again, I grew up in a totally different area with different looking people, right? My mom is German and Irish, and my dad is Puerto Rican and Portuguese. And back in the 60s and 70s, you assimilated. You did not speak another language except English. So for me, I don't speak fluent Spanish. It was not acceptable. My father didn't want that for us. There were horrible things that happened. You know, if you look different and certainly if you spoke different, I remember as a young girl being called half-breed. My mom is blonde hair and blue eyes, and my dad has skin as light as I do with green eyes. But still, people, you know, would not necessarily accept those differences. So for me, it is very, very different. Our journey was different because it was a very different time. It was important for my parents to make sure that their children were educated and speak a certain way and look a certain way, right? So it's not a surprise. Here I sit, sounding a certain way, making sure that, you know, I got my master's degree exactly from where they wanted me to get it and all those things. So I think it is individualized, and also if you look at the time, the 60s and 70s were a much different time than they are today, and there was not a lot of acceptance for people who look like me.
For me, my parents migrated in the 1973. I was born in the mid 80s, so don't get any ideas, guys. And, you know, I can't talk about the 70s or before that, but what I can talk about is my experience. And when I was growing up, one of the things, and like I said previously, in Spanish was, or at home was all Spanish. Todo en español. ¿Quieres inglés? Vas afuera. You go outside and learn English. But my father was very adamant because he said, el patrimonio tuyo es tu lenguaje. Y tu cultura. So your heritage or your biggest inheritance will be your language and your culture. And he said, I have to give it to you from now. And you know what? Today, thank God, I have both languages and I have the culture. I do believe I have three different cultures because I do feel extremely American. I do feel extremely Puerto Rican. And at the same time, there's something in between, right? This is where people talk about Spanglish and whatnot, but there is a crossbreed in there. Can we define it at the moment? There is no title for it, but I do identify in all three.
For me, I think the same way. You know, my parents, you know, my mom is Mexican and my father is Puerto Rican, so they married in Mexico and they migrated here in the early 80s, actually late 70s, early 80s. So I was born here, and similar to Randy, you know, we had a little bit of everything. You know, I feel American, I feel Puerto Rican and Mexican, and I do the Spanglish, you know. Yes, so, you know, it's almost like a unique set of skill, culture that we kind of develop and you learn. And as first generation, you know, Hispanic here, I see other first generation Hispanics, and we have that connection and we understand it. And it's almost like we don't need to tell you if we're Spanish or Puerto Rican or Spanglish. You know, we just start talking, and whatever the mood is, whatever the flavor of that day, that's how we flow. So as far as my parents' dream, I think they wanted us to come here, and you know, it's kind of cliche, but live that American dream, you know, and get educated. You know, like Sylvia graduated college and all so forth. So I think we're living that now. You know, we're seeing some of the fruits of their work and their labor and the sacrifices they made to come to this country and give us a better living, you know, and then we're trying to do the same to our children as well.
I'm a bit younger. I'm a second generation born here. I've learned that my grandparents, you know, migrated here due to circumstances back on the island. Weren't great, you know, they didn't have much opportunity or much provided for them. So they, you know, came, you know, from New York to Cleveland and other places around, but settled in Cleveland. But I learned that, you know, their dream was to, you know, be able to provide for their family and, you know, be healthy. Do I think that could have been achieved back in Puerto Rico? 100%. So being two generations later, I believe that, you know, my grandfather, you know, who I get my last name from, came here so that I could go back. I feel that he left because, you know, it wasn't great opportune times then. But, you know, if he came and sacrificed here and worked here and did what he had to do here, that we could take back our resources here back to the island and be able to provide for the others like us.
So on that note, Freddie, I think you mentioned that there can be a group or, you know, you can come across the path of someone else who's Hispanic and you just know, you know, when you know, you hear the voice and you're like, hey, what's up? So like in the Black community, we have the Black Nod where you look across the room and you're like, hey, what's up? So it's kind of the same thing. And I know I asked Maria and Antonio before about how the different I guess different countries that are represented here in Cleveland, like how well does everyone kind of celebrate together, or I don't want to say like play together, but like connect here in Cleveland, and like having an overwhelming Puerto Rican population, you know, we do have other countries that are represented, but do you see times throughout the year where everyone connects just centrally, or, you know, different events that might bring everyone together?
Yeah, there's a few times and during the year that people connect. You know, one, for example, was this past summer, the Puerto Rican parade. Even though it's labeled as a Puerto Rican parade, there's a big representation from other Hispanic, you know, countries or whatnot. I think just in general, you assimilated the American holidays, you know, for lack of a better term, but, you know, for Christmas and those kind of, you know, holidays, you know, a lot of the Hispanic, you know, community comes together, families, you know, come together. It's almost like you don't really worry about if you're Mexican or Puerto Rican or, you know, Guatemalan, wherever you're from. If you know each other, your family, you sort of just welcome in. Everybody brings a dish from where they're from and everybody enjoys, you know, everybody likes tacos and everybody likes the rice and beans and everybody likes all that stuff. So it's, you know, usually I see that a lot, especially during the holidays. You know, being the work that I do, you know, I see that as well during some of the calls and stuff we go on. We see some of these families that are very united, you know, here. And it's just a cultural thing, you know. Hispanics are naturally loving people, you know. We see each other and we hug and we kiss and we're just very affectionate. It doesn't take much to get to that point. As long as you've seen them more than once, it's almost like a natural, you know, reaction. You got to give them a hug.
Latinos also, regardless of what country you come from, are extremely big believers, right? And so I think you see that in churches as well. It doesn't matter what church you go to, you're going to see people from every single bandera, every single flag, you will see them in there. And you know what? We're all family. We're all going to celebrate. And so you see that, whether you're Catholic, Protestant, or basically anything else, because I also have Muslim friends who still celebrate. They don't eat their pork like we do, right? Because Puerto Rican specifically, we're big on pork. But they also do the same thing, and they celebrate together.
But do you guys see any differences because, like, Puerto Ricans may have be more accessible to, like, travel back and forth to home and back to the U.S.? Do you see a difference in how you may be treated within the Hispanic community at all?
I was always, it wasn't framed for, but I was always kind of, like, given the heads up that, like, hey, be careful, this group of Latinos may be jealous of you. Just because of our accessibility as Americans, you know, and I think that I think that's strategic. I think that you know, that's plays into politics and policies that enabled us to be the same. You know, we could connect on so many levels, but you know, politics get under people's, you know, skin. So when you have the accessibility as a Puerto Rican American, you know, as opposed to a Mexican who is trying to become an American or a Dominican who's trying to become an American, you know, life in America as a Puerto Rican, you're settled. You don't have to wait 9 years to get your green card. So your stresses are a little lessened than the next one, you know. So I think that there may be some tension, but, you know, as Freddie said, you know, we're Latinos and we're, you know, we're passionate and we believe. So, you know, as long as, you know, there's no reason for me to not connect with you, let's connect.
You had something to say, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, we can't ignore the fact that there is some tension, right? Because to most folks, we are in a privileged spot, right? We travel in and out with our blue passport. And so, yeah, there is some tension there. And you know what? The reality is, unfortunately, we can't control that, right? That was done years ago. We can't control that. And, you know, when I have my conversations with all my Latino friends or the community that I work with, and, you know, they don't have their documents, or, you know, they're struggling because they left, you know, their kids at home and they're trying to do something better for them over here. You know, the best thing I can do is love on them, show them grace, and try to help them as much as I can. And you know what? In the current arena that we're in, you know, the number one thing you can say is try to make the best move possible, right? The tensions are there politically, cross-culture. Whether you can stay or not, we know about that. But where are the resources, and can I point you to those resources, right? And in Cleveland, we do have a couple resources that are available to every single person, whether you're Latino or not. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we try to point them in the right direction, try to give them love all the way, because, yes, stress will come up regardless of what it is or where they're coming from. So love, grace, show them where to go, or give them some type of resource that they can hang on to and give them some hope, because there is hope. It's a struggle. It may take time, but you got to keep hope alive.
So, Randy, I think you saw my next question. I really want to know, like, how well does the city of Cleveland, or just our area in general, support the Hispanic community? But also, how well does the Hispanic community support the Hispanic community with different organizations and things? So if you guys can touch on a little bit about what that foundation of support looks like and how easily is accessed.
Well, I think the first place to start off would be with the Spanish American Committee. That is ground zero for any Latino coming from anywhere in the planet. They will help you with housing. They will help you with finding a job. They will help you with getting you some food. I mean, that is absolute ground zero for anybody who's coming in to the States. And there's a number of great people that are in that organization that live and breathe these resources. They also have lawyers on staff that can help with some of the legal issues that come up here and there. other resources, and for me, because I work with so many entrepreneurs, there's, you know, the Hispanic Business Center, the Chamber of Commerce, and so we work with people who come from other parts of the world that they're entrepreneurs, but they don't have everything, they don't have their full legal status yet, right? And so we give them the support. We, you know, surround them with people that can help them, whether it's business or whether it's legal, and just try to make it happen, right? And I say try because we can only do so much. We can go to a certain point, and then the person who's actually coming in has to take that extra step to fulfill whatever their goal is.
I think that there are many things in specifically in this community, including Esperanza. I volunteered for them, and I really love what they do because it really is focused around education. And when I think about these young folks, especially folks that look like all of us, I think that education is just so important. So to keep kids in school, keep them engaged, and then, you know, advanced education. And that is something that they do really, really well. And so I think that there are a lot of amazing organizations in this community specifically to help, you know, folks that are Latina and Latino.
I think the Latin community helps itself a lot. I mean, we are our community. So anytime we catch wave of anything, you know, what is La Villa?
La Villa Hispana?
Well, the festival that goes on once a month, they do... La Placita.
La Placita.
You know, so yeah, like something like that. I mean, what has it been, up 2-3 years now? You know, and it keeps growing. So once we, you know, get something like that and we know, you know, it's grass-rooted and by people like us, you know, that are for us, you know, we are our own community, so, you know, we show up.
I would just add, you know, from the police perspective, I know we've been working a lot with translating a lot of our documents. We recently are in the process of making the first Neighborhood Watch program for fully in Spanish. So it's, I believe, the first one in the city, maybe the first one probably in the state where it's fully in Spanish. We're going to be implementing that fairly soon for our Spanish-speaking neighbors. And, you know, safety is huge, you know, for all communities. But we wanted to make sure that Hispanics are included in that as well. So we had that program for a while. It's successful wherever we implement, and we hope that it's going to be also, you know, successful once it's translated fully in Spanish.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So let's talk a little bit about representation and areas of growth. I mean, coming from a community that is not a dominant face that you see in Cleveland, where do you guys see are some areas where you can be represented better? This is locally, and then also, like, in the media or culturally?
I think in the city, we just need to be represented everywhere, not in just La Villa Hispana. Like, 25th and Clark can't be it. No matter any time I meet someone, oh, you know, what part of town you on? Oh, I'm on the west side. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's little Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool. It's a joke. It's funny. It's true. But, you know, we just can't be contained to that. I think that we need representation, larger representation than just food. I think our art and, you know, our culture needs to be out there as much as possible. Our story needs to be told through many different ways, you know, and again, I don't have the answers, you know, but we can create the answers.
Well, I think the big thing is that we're all different. We come from different walks of life. We all grew up differently. We may have very different beliefs. And I think that not only do I see it, having grown up at a very different time, it's not just having other people accept us, but we need to accept each other. And we don't do such a good job of that all the time. I am non-Spanish speaking. Well, I speak really well when I want to say certain words. How's that? But to have some Puerto Ricans, you know, look down on me. So I think we have to do a better job because we're not always inclusive of one another. We don't always have a great deal of respect. I'm not saying that's universal, but I will say because of when I grew up and how I grew up and the assimilation that was very integral to just be able to navigate during that time, now as an adult, you know, when I meet Puerto Ricans and my last name is Colon and I look Spanish, so the the idea is that I probably am Spanish speaking. So I think it's wonderful when people speak to me in Spanish, and I actually do have a much better understanding of it as an adult than I ever did as a child. But when I can't always say it back fluently. So I would say that we have to do a better job, you know, outside of our community of education. But I think that that comes with acceptance and teaching, but we also can do that within our community as well.
I can't agree with you more. Working with so many clients that are monolingual Espanol, when they see a Latino speaking English or more fluent English, they are totally intimidated, and so they want to compensate for it. I see this day in and day out. And it's not that they're trying to be super malice or whatnot. It's just they're trying to say, hey, I got my grounds. And that's a very Latino thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am who I am. I'm proud of who I am, and I don't need you to, I can stand for myself. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. And so I am one of those people that is trying to say, hey, it's okay. You know, you can defend yourself. Because the reality is most people that I come in contact with, they have very limited English, but they can say something, right? My mom's been here for over 40 years, and her English is extremely limited, but she will get a point across somehow, some way, right? Even if she has to talk with her hands. So I completely agree. But, you know, if we can be that bridge, if I can be the bridge, with arms wide open, I'm going to be the bridge. Mm-hmm. And you know what? We should all be putting our effort in to be that bridge.
So how do you guys feel that Hispanics are represented in media and film? We have a lot of announcements about the Super Bowl coming up with J-Lo and Shakira. Mm-hmm. Oh, I said that so American. Shakira? Shakira? I don't know. Like, share one of your favorite, because I have like favorite, I guess, R&B soul groups or my favorite movies that represent Black culture. Like, share some of your favorites.
You know, recently, I want to say so recent, it was over the weekend, I watched West Side Story again.
Oh, wow.
And yes. Let me tell you, I fell in love. Yeah. I can't explain why, but I just fell in love with that movie all over again. And, you know, it was, I think, back in 1961 when they filmed the movie. But it was so old school, and many things were laughable because it was very stereotypical as well. But there was something quite beautiful in... So for me, I felt a great deal of pride while I was laughing at the same time because it was a pretty crazy movie. And, you know, to think that Natalie Wood, who is very white, played a Latin girl, and would that ever even happen today? And I would hope it wouldn't. And her accent was really bad. But if you think about some other people that were in it, like Rita Moreno. Wow. You know, I mean, she rocked my world all over again in that movie. So when I think about that... Back then, there were some great things. And I think today, I think about women. I'm a woman, and I'm about women being stronger. These young women that are coming out, like, I am so down for that. I think be whomever you want to be, that's who you should be. And I think that it's happening more and more in the 21st century. I love it.
For me as a musician... Moment of my life was Mark Anthony, I think it was 1999, and he had an HBO special. I mean, to this day, many people still go back and re-see that, because for me, that was like a moment in history where we said, no, we are who we are. And it was so explosive that the energy was oozing through the room. And to this day, when I see it, I still get chills, because it was just such a pinnacle moment. Where we said, hey, we're here, we're American, we're proud, and we're going to show it. And ever since then, shortly thereafter is when the whole Latin craze happened. I mean, we can talk all day about the Latin craze, if we were used or not used or whatnot. The reality is people made a lot of money on both ends, some people more than others. But that moment, that concert of Mark Anthony, was so transcendent. It just popped so much and made so many people proud. And it wasn't just Puerto Ricans. I mean, there was people from all over, every single flag, saying, yes, I identify.
Mm-hmm. I would say for me, I think the media or the coverage, I would say with the sports, I'm a big boxing fan, and you know, watching one of my favorite all-time boxers, Felix Tito Trinidad, you know what I mean? And the joy he would bring to the stadiums. And everywhere you went, it was, like, contagious. You know, so where you were Hispanic, you were black, you were white, if Tito was fighting, you know, people were just automatically on his side and just cheering for him. And just seeing that pride that he would come. And I recall he fought a few weeks after 9/11, which was very an emotional time for America. But it was also an emotional time, you know, for them as boxers. And, you know, for him to come in there in that ring, and though he lost and I was heartbroken that night, you know, he brought a sense of pride to America. And he sort of reflected that with his attitude, his charisma, and how he kind of composed himself during the ring. And then you look at other sports figures, you know, like David Ortiz, you know, he's a Dominican descent. And, you know, everybody knows Big Papi, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't need to know Spanish, but you know how to say Papi, you know, because of David Ortiz, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things that just, you know, it highlights, and you see them in sports. And you know, typically sports and music, LaRandy says, it has a way to unite community, you know. So despite what you do, where you come from, you know, I've been in scenes as a police officer where, you know, I've had, you know, very serious incidents and, you know, music or something's on TV or something will come on, you know, music related or sports related. And we instantly have something to talk about within, despite, you know, what's going on, you know, people find that common ground, you know, especially, you know, in sports, and we share that, you know. And now, you know, here in Cleveland, obviously with sports, with the Browns and stuff like that, the Indians, we have Francisco Lindor and, you know, all these, you know, Hispanic descent, you know, players that are just bringing the city together. And we kind of look beyond just the race, and we just let, you know, have a common ground, which is, to me, that's huge.
I just firmly believe in our Latinos in the public eye. We are there, and it's inevitable. You know, I like to think back about, you know, one of my superheroes, you know, Crazy Legs, you know, Rocksteady Crew. You know, I'm a B-boy. I'm a hip-hop, you know, head to the, you know, to the day I die, and, you know, just being able to know what the foundation that was laid way before me, you know. And, you know, you, like, you know, you don't have to know Spanish, but you know Papi, you know, but you know the name Crazy Legs, you know, like just the name. You don't know, you may not even know it pertains to dancing, but you just know the name. So, you know, there's people there and there's figures there. Can it be better? There's always room for improvement. But, you know, just you can't stop our shining, you know, at all. You know, we'll be there.
It's funny, me and my family, we were in Puerto Rico for like a day, and we took a cab to, I think, the fort. We were going somewhere to go sightsee, and we had on our Indians gear, and the cab driver was like, hey, you know, they're from Cleveland, like, you have one of our treasures. Like, it was super exciting. We were like, hey, you know, it was cute.
Frankie.
Yes. So, as we wrap up the podcast, I want you guys to share with me a little bit about what makes your culture unique, or like, what's the one part of your culture that you just love the most?
I guess I'll go first real quick. You know, me, I love the Hispanics because we have a whole different combination of color. We have whites, we have black, we have brown, we have, you know, different sizes, different, you know, languages. Even within the Spanish, you have the Mexican, you know, accent, the Puerto Rican accent, the Cuban accent, and you know, we make jokes amongst it about that, mm-hmm. stuff, and you kind of just poke fun at each other, and there's always that competitive rivalry. So even though you're Mexican or you're Puerto Rican, you just, mm-hmm. you have that competitive rivalry, but it's always in a family oriented, you know, manner. We're very passionate people, we're very loving people. So I think that's what the highlights, you know, the pride that I would have, you know, for Hispanics. Like I mentioned earlier in the podcast about, you know, you see someone that's from Spanish descent, and like, kind of like you say, you have the, hey, you know, you look and you what's know up? And you nod, what's up? Yeah, we, you know, we have it too. And, you know, and before you know it, we're talking, and hey, where are you from? And then, oh, I'm from here. And before you start talking about your backgrounds and where you come from, and you find usually a common ground, you know, whether it's, you know, your family or how long you've been here, or, you know, food, music, whatever the case may be, you always tend to find that common ground, which I think is beautiful, you know, part of our culture.
I agree. I mean, I've been overseas once or twice, and Latinos are in every single corner of the earth, let me tell you that. And the moment you hear even just a slight word in Spanish, you jump, mm-hmm. and you immediately connect. Some of the greatest conversations I've had have been abroad, and it's been, you know, with another a Latino family or someone who has recently moved to that country or is traveling for work or whatnot, and we immediately connect. And so there is so much that unites us. There's more that unites us than what actually divides us. And that's what makes our community such a powerful community. And there is so much potential within this community. Have we been held back? Yes, we can't hide that from anybody. Sorry, I don't know how to translate that. But the reality is there is so much energy and there is so much potential within us that is inevitable. That our day will come, right? It sounds crazy to say that our day will come because we are growing, we are moving forward, right? But everyone here is probably second, third generation, and I can almost guarantee you that everyone in here has the same intention. My kid is going to go 10 times farther than I went. So my foundation for my parents, I built up on that, and my kids are going to be in a much better place when it comes their time. Do we have adequate representation, because we didn't talk about this, politically among, you know, in national and local politics? No, heck no. We are so off the mark. But the reality is there is so many people in the come up. And yes, some of them are left, some of them are right. But you know what? We are the color of the rainbow. And so that's how you're gonna receive us, from both sides of the aisle or from even from somebody right down the middle.
I love being Puerto Rican, and I recently was in Puerto Rico for New Year's, and my brother and I, and I will tell you, I feel so close to my family there, and it is a pride that is not describable, but I think about my Puerto Rican family is very resilient. These are phenomenal people, and I think about everything that that island has been through in the last couple of years. And to be there after the hurricane, for example, and see everybody and how they come together and the pride that I personally felt being there, having grown up here in the States, really, you know, I get very emotional when I talk about it because I love being Puerto Rican. I love it.
My favorite thing about being Latino is our coffee. you know, first things first, would not be able to survive without Putelo. The connectivity, being able to connect with one another no matter where you are, no matter what flag you represent, you know, we're still Latinos and we hold our core values. And I think that that is another favorite part of mine, is our values and our ethics, you know, because you can be taught a lot of things, but there's certain things that will never leave you, you know, and like amor de madre, you know, loving your mother. That's, you know, one of our biggest things. So that's very, very important to me. But, you know, furthermore, I love being Puerto Rican. Everything about that, you know, we got our own swagger, you know.
Yes, we do.
We have a little bit of privilege with a little bit of reality. You know, because we know what it is to struggle in the campo or to see somebody in the caserío, you know, that's not doing as well as you, but, you know, they're just as willing to give as much as you. So, love it.
I'll just add, you know, proud is not even the word. Like we say in Spanish, se le infla el pecho a uno cuando uno habla de Puerto Rico.
Yes.
You can translate for her.
Yeah. How can we translate that, Fred?
Your chest sticks up with pride.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
So I as well love being Puerto Rican.
Sylvia, I think you mentioned going back home and how you felt when you went back home. How important is it to go back home, and where is your favorite place to go when you visit?
Well, I love going to La Guancha in Ponce. Love it. My family is from Ponce y Juanadias, and in Juanadias it's the campo, so it's very different than the city in Ponce. What's not to love about that island? I mean, from the moment we land, and we're there with my family, who truly they're the most amazing human beings. That island is just full of amazing people. So for me, that's my favorite, just being on the island and being, you know, not sightseeing like everybody that goes mm-hmm. to see the island. I mean, I'm in it. I'm living it. We're hanging. We're, you know, we're going to the little areas where they're selling food on the side of the street. Like, that's kind of my thing. And just, you're living with your family. That's what you're doing. So that's what I love about it. Not doing anything specific, but just being part of, you know, the Colon Cruz family. That's mm-hmm. who I'm about, and that's what I love about it every time I go there. I love that island.
I got the blessings from both worlds. I got the best of both. So when I go to Mexico, you know, it's the same thing, the culture. You know, we just went to Guadalajara, Mexico, where my mom is from, and we spent a week there. And just, you know, seeing, you know, everybody just kind of interact. And it's funny, like, we've been kind of the common theme here about, you know, despite where you're from, we have a lot of similarities, you know, and the livelihood, the loveliness, the hugs and the kisses from the family and the food. Everywhere you go, there's food. And you get off, whether it's Mexico or you get off in Puerto Rico, you know, there's music, there's food, mm-hmm. and there's happiness, you know what I mean? And that's kind of a common theme, you know, across, you know, Central. And I've been to Nicaragua, and it's a similar, you know, environment. So I think it's just a common theme within the Hispanic, you know, community.
No kidding. Being welcomed with a mariachi in Mexico is breathtaking. It is breathtaking. But in Puerto Rico specifically, I mean, as soon as you're coming around in San Juan and you start seeing the buildings and mm-hmm. the houses, your heart is racing. Yeah. It's like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if any other country does this, but as soon as you land, everybody in that airplane is clapping and cheering. It is the place that always does this. You will always see people clapping and cheering, just so happy to be home, basically, right? Yeah. So I'm born and raised here, first generation, but when I'm over there, I'm home too, mm-hmm. right? My family's from Jauco, which is in the southern side of Puerto Rico. And, you know, my parents are from El Campo, mm-hmm. Opposite sides of the mountain, but from El Campo. And so I'm not so much of a Campo guy, but man, it is so refreshing to be up there, to just get that fresh whiff in the morning, el café calientito en la mañana, el pan, all these experiences that are just so, you know, familial, right? They're from your family, from your roots. And you know what? You talk to your grandparents, they went through the exact same thing, and just you just always relate to that same experience. My favorite places in Puerto Rico, obviously Jauco, my 94-year-old grandma, God bless her, is over there. But as I'm a city boy, I love San Juan, El Viejo San Juan specifically, and for food, Vaca Brava, which is in Barranquitas.
I'll actually be flying back into Puerto Rico in about 24 hours
or so. Oh, man.
Yeah. This will be about my sixth trip back this year.
Ponme la maleta.
So, yeah, no, I love it, and I plan to be there as much as I can. So my favorite place to be is El Yunque, you know, the rainforest. Mm-hmm. I drove through there the first time this year, and you could literally feel the spirits around you. It was a natural adrenaline rush. It was the most amazing thing. I mean, to make it all the way up top and then, you know, climb a little extra and then get to that top waterfall. I mean, there's nothing like it. And then drive, you know, 20 minutes down and then you're back at the beach. So, you know, it's the best place in the world. Everything about it is my favorite, so. But El Yunque is it.
Yeah, my favorite place is Adjuntas. That's where I'm from. It is so tropical. It's like, I'm going to say it's like a rainforest there. It's a little bit, there's a little bit of cold, there's a little bit of, you know, hot. But it's really nice. The air, even the air is different there. So, yeah, just visiting family is the best, especially because my mom's there now, so.
Adjuntas has great artists, too.
Yes.
Great singers that came out of the island that, you know, will live on for generations and generations and generations to come.
Maria's father is one of the greatest artists.
One of the greatest Jibaro singers of all time, and we had the privilege
to meet him
because he was such a big person in our community, so amazing man.
So I thank you guys so much for sharing. And because you have someone who is definitely learning so much from you all, I have Maria here who I bug all the time about my Spanish, and she just, I know she reads my text messages like what, but she gets it and she helps me. So like, thank you, Maria, for being my Spanish teacher. But shout out a great place to get some great food. So I brought some goodies in here and I'm ready to end this podcast so I can go eat. But where are some good places that folks can go try? I know just recently I went to Blue Habanero. It's like Cleveland Latino Restaurant Week or something.
Yes, it is.
So I was able to go there and I didn't even know. And we were like, oh, sweet. You know, we're supporting. This is great. And the food was amazing. So where are some of your favorite places to go for food?
Cleveland Mofongo. Yes. That's, if there's anywhere that I'm going to eat outside of my mom's kitchen, it's there. They take the cookie for me. They take the mofongo for me.
For me. Go ahead. When my mother was alive, even though my mother is American, she made the best Puerto Rican food.
Oh, wow.
This side of the equator. I mean, my dad taught her right.
She had to keep her man, so she was
I would say no place like Mama's Kitchen. I don't really like to go out and eat in restaurants, so I would say the best place to eat is always where my Puerto Rican family is. Mm-hmm. That's the place to be.
Yeah, I agree. Home is always good. I like all of them. I like Rincon Criollo, La Villas. Recently just tried Gully's, I think it's called, on Denison. Just Wally's. Opened. Gully's. Oh, Gully's, yeah. Yeah. So they're all good, you know, Caribe Bakery. So we have a lot of good spots that are coming up, and they all make fantastic food. So shout out to all of them.
Anywhere my mom's at, or my aunt's, or the church mothers as well, you're never going to lose. You're never going to lose. In terms of restaurants locally, there is a new kid in town. His name is John Garcia, El Sabor de Ponce.
Yeah.
If you haven't been there, you should be there. The guy has amazing, amazing food. He is one, and the other, you said Cleo Mofongo, I will also say Campus Grill.
Campus Grill. Yes.
Those two guys are in another planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have all said my favorite places to go to. There's also a Mexican place, it's called Don Ramon. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, La Placita, La Plaza in Lakewood. They got amazing tacos.
Oh, they do, yeah.
For
yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Or those, yeah, or Los Gallos. That's out in Bedford. Authentic as you can, as it can be.
East side? All right. All right, thank you guys so, so much. I appreciate it so much. How do you say it? Like, gracias a todos. Is that gracias a todos? Okay.
See,
you guys intimidate me, but I'm really like, I'm not bad. I'm not shabby.
She goes for it.
Yeah. But thank you so, so much. I appreciate it. And we hope to have you guys back soon. Another topic, another day, because you gave so much and I appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Gracias.